Case number 20-3081, United States of America versus Amistad Jimon Bonet, appellant. Ms. Wright for the appellant, Mr. Hansford for the appellate.
Morning.
Morning. May it please the court, Lisa Wright representing Mr. Amistad Bini. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The district court here committed legal error in concluding that Mr. Bini's continuation of his forward motion was per se inconsistent with submission to Officer Torres' show of authority.
Is that microphone on?
Is it on? Microphone? There's a green light.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Must be me.
No, I was having trouble too.
Oh.
Me.
Maybe pull it a little closer to you.
Is that better?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay. Because the district court mistakenly concluded that Mr. Bini could not submit while he continued to walk, the district court did not address at all or even mention Mr. Vini's argument that he submitted by immediately turning around as Torres had requested. Here we have the body-worn camera video from which the court can see that Mr. Vini did indeed submit. Because the facts are fully available to this court via the BWC, the court can and should conclude that there was a submission and suppress the evidence that was the fruit thereof. In the alternative, if this court agrees that the district court committed legal error in finding that Mr. Vini's forward motion was determinative, but was inclined to have the district court address the significance of Mr. Vini's turn in the first instance, a remand for that purpose would also be appropriate.
Can you clarify what your test is for submission? Does Mr. Vini have to both stop and turn around in order for there to be submission?
No.
No,
because
one would be enough.
Well, the request was to turn around. It was a rejection of Mr. Vini's rejection of the request to turn around.
And you think that he fully turned around and faced the officer?
I think that he gave the officer the view that the officer was requesting because he wanted to see his front, and he could see his front because of the way the angle was. He was able to see. In fact, I mean, the side view was really the
So I've watched that body cam, you know, at 15 seconds over and over. And I guess, what if I do not disagree with any of the district court's factual determinations? Is it possible for you to still win this appeal?
I believe so, because the court didn't even address the turn. That was our argument below, that he had to submitted by turning, and the district court does not even mention that argument in the opinion because the court thought it did not matter since he was moving. And we understand that the video is very fast. Everything happens in 2 seconds, and in fact, he really submits in the first second, because if you look, when he says no, the counter is at 33. And then he takes a step, takes a left step and turns his head, that's on page 19, I believe, takes the right step and turns his body, and that is page 20. And then on 21 is when he hesitates. And the counter there is still 34. So we understand it's fast, but there is a way, and I don't know if others are more tech savvy than I am, but you can put playback into super slow mode, and that does help. But we believe our screenshots do show the submission.
You think he stopped walking away?
I think he continued to move, but at worst for us, what the district court said was that he would not feel free to leave until he showed that he did not have a gun. So that's not saying there was no halt, there was no hold on or stop order. So what we would say is he couldn't leave without turning around, and he did do that. He did turn around, and he wasn't, you know, walking away because he was already walking. And the government acknowledges that. He was within his rights to have walked away. That's when he walked away, was initially. After that, he's simply continuing to do what he's doing, only he's turning around to show his front. And I think it's really on all fours with the Gibson case, where the command was, let me see your waistband. In that case, police had pulled up beside someone who was walking. And that person continued walking while their shirt was lifted. And the court the district court found that that was a submission. And here we would say it's even a stronger case because in Gibson, they were maintaining the same distance from each other. And here, Mr. Vini actually hesitates before taking that third step such that they're getting closer and he's allowing Torres to draw closer to him. He covered like a half a tree box distance while Torres covered the whole tree box. I mean, he was letting him come to him in a way that Gibson wasn't.
So the dialogue that precedes all of this is, big man, you got nothing on you, man. And Vaney responds, I don't got S on me. And then he says, you mind turning around for me? And he says, I'm not man, nah, I'm going to walk off. That's what the district court finds.
Yes.
And then Torres presses the matter by saying, no, I just want to make sure you got no guns. The district court makes a finding at the bottom of page 84, A34, carrying over to the next page, that as far as the seizure goes, the district court makes a finding that Vaney has satisfied his burden of producing evidence showing that a reasonable person in his shoes would not have felt free to leave until he proved to the officer that he did not possess a gun. You don't challenge that ruling.
To the extent that's a factual finding. I mean, we actually believe that our main argument, we believe we prevail under that interpretation of the exchange, but there we actually think that it's simpler than that, and it's just he wants him to turn around, he refuses, and he says no, and that it really is just a rejection of Mr. Vini's rejection, and he's saying, no, turn around. I asked you to turn around, and you declined. I'm saying no. So, but even under this interpretation of that passage, we would still...
So if the ruling is that a reasonable person would not have felt free to leave until he proved to the officer that he did not possess a gun, then the district court followed from that, then that he was seized and he was not free to leave, and because he continued walking, he did not submit. So if the ruling is correct that a reasonable person would feel that they were not free to leave, but he left, tried to leave by walking, how is that an erroneous ruling?
Well, a couple things. I mean, he isn't actually leaving Officer Torres because Officer Torres has followed him. He left Torres originally. That's one thing. But I would say that, I guess to the extent he's
saying... For the Fourth Amendment, you have to be successful in leaving. You have to get away. I mean, if you don't successfully leave, I mean, we wouldn't have cases if the people who fled were successful in
There's no flight. I mean, this is not a flight situation, but I understand what you're saying. But if you start walking, that is different than continuing to walk. That is our point. And I think Brendlin, the Supreme Court, said what you're doing beforehand is significant to whether there's been a submission. And here all he does is continue. And in fact, he doesn't exactly continue. He slows down. He hesitates. And I guess this.
We'd have to find clear error to find that, though, right? Because the district court finds that he walked at the same pace.
I think that is probably correct. But there is clear error on the body-worn camera because you can count the steps and you can see. And see him hesitate on page 20. I think I actually have a typo in the brief where he's hesitating most clearly is the top of page 21, not page 20. But I do think when the district court said he walked at the same pace, that's not accurate. And partly it was because, you know, the judge really didn't care what pace it was, I think, because he just thought he was moving and he was leaving. But as far as with him saying you have to prove to the officer he didn't possess a gun, I want to be clear, you know, there's, we're not certainly thinking that that would mean or agree that that would mean that he had to, you know, strip down or in some way literally prove he didn't have a gun. But it's, you know, until he shows the government, the cop, what the cop is asking to see, because the cop is interested in the gun and I think, and whether he has a gun. And I think he says, you know, like we say in the reply, you know, when he's basically saying, would you mind doing X for me? And Mr. Vini says, no, I'm not going to do X, I'm going to do Y. And the officer says, no, I just want to make sure, you know, Z, make sure you don't have a gun. And so the no is really saying, give me what I want, which is to see that you don't have a gun. And the turning around satisfies that. And indeed, that's exactly what the officer had asked for originally and been refused. I mean, that is the request that, and he's already legitimately walking. There is a difference between starting to walk when you think you can't leave without showing. But this is all happening simultaneously. He's already walking, just as in Gibson. It really is. And the government doesn't dispute that Gibson is correctly decided. They try to distinguish Gibson. I'm not really clear on the distinction they're making, but they seem to be saying that somehow Mr. Gibson is keeping up with the police car, when really, just as here, the police car is keeping up, and in fact, in our case, gaining on defendant.
I mean, it's clear that Torres is walking faster than the appellant because, I mean, he's several feet away from the appellant when the appellant starts walking. So I'm not sure kind of where that gets you, where the district court finds that they are essentially parallel when Torres observes what he believes to be an imprint of a weapon. And the district court makes that finding, right?
Well, we dispute the court's summary of the body-worn camera footage because the court skips over entirely the turn, which was our whole argument below. It says, he summarizes it as Officer Torres, while walking a few feet behind Vini, quote, no, I just want to make sure you got no guns, and then skips and says the next thing, Vini, as he walked at the same pace down the street with Officer Torres walking parallel beside him, don't got S on me, what are you talking about? It's a belt. We do not accept that factual description of the body-worn camera, and I understand it's quick, but that's simply not what happened. And you know, I just think it's telling that the district court doesn't even take on the turn. So, I mean, if this court, you know, were to remand to the district court to take it on, that would be one thing. But I don't see how we can lose on the facts here when the district court didn't even really address the fact that we're focusing on and just kind of skipped over it. Because you can't go from being a few feet behind to walking at the same pace parallel. I mean, in fact, something happened, which was that he caught up with him. And part of the reason he caught up was that hesitation on that third step. I mean, they're keeping pace with each other.
Are you saying that the district court found that the two men, Torres, Officer Torres and Vaney, were walking at the same pace?
No. He's saying that Vaney continued to walk at the same pace, with Officer Torres walking parallel beside him. But again, the court gets him there from walking a few feet behind and doesn't address like how it was. It was because Mr. Vini turned and hesitated. They were keeping the same pace initially, although Torres's steps were bigger, they were taking the same number of steps. You know, when he said, no, head turn. No, I got that back. No, head turn, body turn. At that point is when Mr. Vini hesitates and Torres takes a step, and then together they take the opposite step. And by that time, but truly in that first second is when the turning and the hesitation took place. And the court just didn't consider that below because it didn't think it mattered.
Your argument revolves around the proposition that he was stopped earlier than the district court found.
That he was stopped.
But why wouldn't it still be justified as a Terry stop because it's a high crime area known for firearms. He was walking away, making furtive gestures, trying to conceal something in his waistband. And why isn't that enough to stop him anyway? And then, once having stopped him and noticing the bulge, which turned out to be a firearm.
Well, the government has...
You didn't dispute that part of the district court's findings, did you?
Well, we dispute the district court's characterization of Torres's testimony with respect to the hand positioning.
Positioning, yeah. But what I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the observation that he was making gestures to try to conceal something in his waistband.
Yeah, but that's not what Torres said, what we're saying. So we don't agree with...
First of all, district judges don't even have to write an opinion in this kind of a case. They can just say denied. Right?
The district court did not find that there was reasonable suspicion at that point. The district court said the linchpin of its reasonable suspicion finding was the seeing of the bulge.
Yeah, but we're not bound by that. I mean, this is de novo review.
Well, the government isn't asking this court to find reasonable suspicion. The government's asking for a remand for the district court to consider that because it was never considered. We would say the district court implicitly rejected that because it did not even mention that potential thing that it was holding.
Well, that doesn't mean the court rejected it because he didn't mention.
Well, if he had, well.
He didn't need to mention.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right.
Can I get clarity on something your client said on the body cam? Your theory today and in your brief is that we know he submitted because he turned around enough for the officer to see the bulge, right? Is that a yes? Is that a yes so far?
Sorry.
You nodded yes, but is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Sorry. But I think on the body cam video, your client says something like, "You didn't see nothing, man. I walked off." So how is that consistent with your theory?
Is Your Honor referring to when he says, "No, I'm going to walk off"?
No, it's later. I think the officer says, "I saw the outline, bro." This is not a direct quote.
Right.
And then Mr. Vini responds with something like, "You didn't see nothing, man. I done walked off."
Not sure exactly what point. You were saying that was in response to Torres saying what?
I saw the outline.
Saw the outline. I think that's much later. When they're arguing at by that point.
Right, but that's my point, I think, is that if it's much later and Mr. Vini is saying, "You couldn't have seen the outline of the gun." Right?
No, then, I think he's saying you can't see it. I mean, right now, as you're looking, he's pointing at it at one point and he's saying, "Well, what is this?" And he's like, "This is a belt." And he is disputing, you know, what the officer is seeing.
Just help me see or explain why there's not tension between your theory that Mr. Vini turned around enough to show the officer the bulge
right.
Where the gun was. Contrast it with Mr. Vini's later statement, "You, the officer, couldn't have seen anything. I was walking off."
I would want to listen to that tape again because I don't really remember the wording being like what Your Honor's saying. I thought it was, if anything, he was saying, as the, pointing at him in his waist, he's saying, "What are you talking about? This is a belt." He's acknowledging that the officer can see a bulge. He's trying to persuade him that it's not contraband. That's different than acting like he thinks that it couldn't be seen. I mean, I'm not saying Mr. Vini might have been hoping he didn't see it, but he did reveal what he asked for. And I mean, it's kind of notable that in a couple of the cases where evidence has been suppressed for compliance with a command like in both Mabry, for example, and in Brody, the compliance doesn't actually yield the fruit. The person runs off and then the fruit is revealed. Here, you know, he actually gave him exactly what he wanted. It yielded exactly what he wanted. And I guess we would say that is a very clear submission.
All right, thank you. We'll give you a couple minutes in rebuttal.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hansford.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Eric Hansford, the United States.
The defendant's claim that he submitted in this case fails for two separate and independent reasons. First is, as the district court found, the show of authority meant that the defendant was not free to leave, and yet the defendant was continually trying to walk away throughout the encounter. And the district court specifically finds that he was trying to walk away in footnote 4 of the opinion. Second, even assuming that the defendant could have complied by turning around as he was leaving, the video makes clear that he did not ever turn around. And instead, as the district court found, the officer spotted the gun from the side as he was overtaking the defendant. So for both those reasons, the defense argument does not
work. Let's suppose we don't agree with the first proposition and we agree that he could have submitted by turning around, but there's no finding by the district court as to exactly whether he did turn around or whether it was sufficient to be a submission. Why shouldn't we remand instead of kind of making that factual finding ourselves in the first instance, which we don't do as a court of appeals usually?
So I think you do have a factual finding, an important factual finding from the district court on page 65 of the FSUP, which I think is 36 of the appendix, where the district court is saying the officer saw the gun from the side, and contrasting that with the post-arrest photos or the arrest photos that are taken from the front, and explaining that it makes sense that the officer would have been able to see the gun from the side, even if you make it out the front. And so I think that's perhaps not the most explicit finding, but I think that is a finding that the officer is seeing it from the side, and therefore that's inconsistent with the turning. I think that
how is that inconsistent with the turning theory? I mean, if you see something from the side, that is in the front of the other person, you either have to be in front of that person slightly or that person has to turn slightly to you for you to see their front.
Well, I think when you take it in conjunction with the body-worn camera, which shows the officer walking past the defendant, looking over to his right as he's doing so, I think the finding that it's made from the side does mean that the officer is spotting it not as the defendant is turning, because then the finding, I think, would be that he's seeing the gun from the front.
So we have to infer that that's what the district court found, since we don't have an explicit statement that effect.
I think you don't have a completely explicit finding on that, but I think that's the reasonable from the district court, from what the district court is saying. I think you can also look at the body-worn camera here and say that no district court is going to be able to find that the defendant did turn based on this body-worn camera, where there's no indication in the transcript, there's no testimony or other evidence that he did turn. There's just nothing to suggest that he did turn.
You don't think I can look at the body-worn camera and see that there's at least a slight turn?
I don't think so. I don't think there's a slight turn in the body-worn camera. I think if you, especially the full scope of the all three body-worn cameras, I think from certain angles it might seem like he was starting to turn. But then I think when you're looking at Jacobs and McCaw camera, it's clear what he's doing. It's actually plating his body. But I do think, I think the first point is, the reason there's more explicit findings on the first point that the defendant was not free to leave is because that was the primary rationale for the district court's opinion. And we do think that rationale is fully supported by what the district court's saying. What the I guess I'm having trouble understanding the defense argument. As I understood to the court's questions, to Judge Wilkins' questions, the defense is accepting the finding that there was a show of authority that required the defendant not to leave until he proved that he didn't have a gun. And so I think that show of authority finding is going to control the fact that the defendant was continually walking away.
So let's do a little demonstrative.
Sure.
Let's suppose I'm the defendant, you're the officer. I do like this. See, walking. I don't stop moving. Have I submitted?
No, not on the district court's fact finding.
You couldn't detect any bulges with a robe on anything. So I
think you can see that for a couple of both factually and so the factual bucket is the full context of what the conversation happened. So the officer approaches, says, "Do you have anything on you?" And it says no. The officer says, "Would you mind turning around for me?" That's not the show. Defendant says, "No, I'm going to walk off." The officer then says, "No, I just need to make sure you don't got no guns on." That's the show of authority.
And the way that he wanted him to do that was turning around.
I don't think a reasonable person would understand that merely turning around as you're walking away in that full context is going to satisfy the officer. Instead, I think what you have here is the reasonable inference is that officer, this is what the district court's finding, the officer's trying to determine if the defendant has a gun. Part of that may be turning around, but it's not for the defendant to decide on his own that all he needs to do is turn around, and then that's going
to
satisfy.
But that's all he was told to do, is turn around or ask.
I mean, no, I think what he's being asked to do and what the show of authority is to stop. The no, I just need to make sure you don't have no guns. That comes directly after the defendant says, "I'm going to walk off." And then he starts walking off. So the no, I think, is most easily understood as responding to that. And that's supported by the larger context.
But the defendant's no is most read easily or reasonably responding to the request that I want you to turn around for me.
That may be right, but I don't think the defendant's no is what's controlling the show of authority here. It's the officer's words in the show of authority. And I think you also see this in the case law, both in the more general sense that how this court commonly and the Supreme Court commonly defines what a show of authority is, what a seizure is a situation where the person's not free to leave. So we go through some of that case law in 21 to 22, even just the language of it's a Terry stop, it's a detention. That is indicating that you are not free to leave at that point. But then you also have the more specific cases. Maybe Brody's the cleanest example, where the officer pulls up beside the defendant, says, "Put your hands on that car." The defendant does so for a few seconds, and then the officer turns away and the defendant runs off. And what this court says is that when he puts his hands on the car and remains there for a few seconds, that's brief submission. But that when he runs away, that's no longer submission. So in other words, implicitly, what this court is saying in Brody, I think is consistent with Mabry, is that it's not just that he had to literally comply with the command by putting his hands on the car, and then he's free to leave. It's that he has to put his hands on the car and remain there until the officer indicates that he's.
But putting an order to put your hands on the car has a different purpose than an order to turn around. The officer didn't, in Brody, order him to put his hands on the car just so that he could see his hands and observe his hands. It was so that he would be there in a position so that he would be seized and could be frisked, right?
We don't know exactly what.
Well, why else would an officer lawfully, what other lawful basis would an officer have to tell somebody to put their hands on a car other than put your hands on the car because I intend to frisk you?
I mean, I think it, I think in Brody, what you have is a situation where a defendant's leaving the scene of a warrant. So it may just be that they're ultimately identifying him. It may be that they're frisking, but I would say that's the same as this case, which is that it does the officer no good if the defendant, as he's walking away, turns around, revealing a gun that would confirm the officer's suspicions, and you understand at that point that the defendant is nonetheless still free to walk away. What is understood?
It seems like you're blurring the analysis here with that statement. I mean, if Vaney had turned around as soon as the officer asked him to and said, look, okay, and then started walking away, he would have complied with the officer, right? Unless and until the officer told him to stop.
So there is no show of authority at the time that he's asked to turn around, and it's a request, it's not a command to turn around. But, and so I think at that point, yes, he's fully free to leave because there has not been a show of authority.
Well, but once there's a show of authority, isn't there a presumption, maybe a rebuttable presumption, but a presumption that the suspect is not free to go?
Right. I mean, I think that's generally what a show of authority means. Exactly. And I think that is what this court is saying in the Mabry case and the Delaney case in defining a show of authority as a situation where the defendant's not free to leave. And I think this goes to Rendlin more generally talks about how there are public safety concerns any time there are these sorts of interactions, and what you want to address those public safety concerns, right? He says this as well, is to put the officer unquestionably in charge of the situation, for the officer to be the one who's indicating when the seizure is terminated. And that's what a reasonable person would understand in that context. So if there is no legal basis for it, then the remedy there is to go to court and test whether or not there's reasonable articulable suspicion, as opposed to the defendant deciding on his own to kind of narrow the officer's request and turn away and walk away. That's when you run into public safety problems that are indicated in Brendan. And lastly, on Judge Randolph's questions about reasonable articulable suspicion in this case, we do agree that given the district court's finding of kind of the furtive movements plus the high crime area could support a finding of reasonable articulable suspicion. We do understand there are kind of challenges to the factual findings related to the district court's opinion on that score, and the district court didn't resolve the hand-to-hand transaction findings. So that's why we are asking for a remand there, as opposed to straight affirmance on the reasonable articulable suspicion. But that would be our position on that. If there are no further questions, we'd ask the court to vote.
All right, thank you. Ms. Wright, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. The government says that the court found that Officer Torres saw the bulge from the side and went parallel, and that dooms our argument. But this is not at all inconsistent with him turning, because the officer is...
What should the officer have done, according to your view? He's walking besides the defendant. And the defendant does not turn around, insists on walking. What should the officer have done then?
Well, it's our position that he shouldn't have told him to stop at all, because there was no reason.
Now, let's take it from where the video takes it. The officer's walking beside him, tells the defendant to stop or no, and the defendant keeps walking. What should the officer have done?
Well, he could have said stop at that point, but the officer can do whatever the officer wants. But the question is,
you know, we've been debating this now for 20 minutes. How long did this encounter take?
He stopped within 1 second. He was seized within 1 second.
I mean, even if he was the most brilliant expert in the Fourth Amendment, do you think he went through all the calculations and machinations that we're going through and in 20 minutes of oral argument by competent counsel?
But this the question is, there was nothing for the officer, no decision to be made by the officer. Under Hodari, the officer makes a show of authority, and then it's the defendant's actions. Nothing the officer could have done or not done would have changed whether Mr. Vini submitted. So there is no split-second decision-making by the officer. The split-second decision-making was when he chose to issue a show of authority, which we would say was a mistake, and we understand those calls are difficult for officers, but what we're talking about was afterwards in this sort of, at this point, it's just an objective question of whether his actions were a submission. And, the government says that no turn can be seen on the body-worn camera, and we would just say that the screenshots on our brief are clearly show there was. And that in the context, merely turning around isn't enough, but that's all he was asked to do. And then finally, the government is saying that a Terry stop is, it's all about being free to leave. And what our point is this is an acquisition by control, in the words of Torres v. Madrid. And here, Torres controlled the movements of Mr. Vini. And the other language from Mendenhall, besides being not free to leave, is giving someone direction and suggesting that compliance might be compelled. And so if you comply with what they're trying to compel, that also is a seizure. And we also point to the language in Terry that says, was the defendant's liberty restrained, quote, in some way? And here, I just want to finally say that, by moving his body in the way Torres was demanding and engaging with him despite his expressed desire not to engage with him, because beforehand he's looking dead ahead. I mean, that photograph you can just see, he's studiously walking. And he changes his behavior, gauges and turns in response. And in that way, he is allowing Torres to control him, his movements, and he was thereby seized.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.